Ever hear somebody say we can do this the easy way or we can do it the hard way? I mean, what kind of a choice is that? At GEICO.com, everything's easy. Easy to see how much you could save on car insurance, easy to go paperless by automatically paying your bid online. Easy, easy, easy. So visit GEICO.com today. Of course, if you prefer the hard way, I guess you'll have to go someplace else. Sorry, I just don't get it.
Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, good evening, and thank you for joining us here on San Clemente Punk, proudly part of the Fighting Words Radio Network here on blogtalkradio.com. This is San Clemente Punk for June 13, 2011. It is my mother's birthday. I want to say happy birthday, Ma. Tonight we will be interviewing the legendary and accomplished Dave Smalley. Dave has been involved in the punk scene since the late 70s, early 80s, and I'm really looking forward to tonight's interview. He has been around and been in so many legendary and successful bands that, you know, it promises to be an absolutely fantastic interview. We are going to start off tonight, though, with Broken Bottles. Sadly, Jess the Master, Jesse Rich, which was his real name, succumbed to a drug overdose early this year. So it's truly an integral part of the Orange County scene, and punk as a whole was really lost to time. Broken Bottles formed in 2000. They were known as a somewhat sloppy, sometimes tight show. Either way, they were well worth the price of admission. This is Broken Bottles with Stars and Stripes. with Stars and Stripes, which is a great song. And it's really sad that that Jeff succumbed to his demons like that. The This Is Hardcore Fest is almost upon us. August 11th through 14th, the show will feature so many great hardcore bands. Underdog, Youth of Today, Mouthpiece, H2O, Token Entry, Wrong Answer, Terror, Madball, Blacklisted, and Bane are among the participants. Wrong Answer is a Philly hardcore band that will be playing the 12th. They're actually on the Harvcore, H-A-R-V-C-O-R-E, record label out of Westchester, Pennsylvania. And this band is a very, very good band. I really like these guys. We've had them on the show before. We've interviewed Justin before. And, I'm really happy. Because I'm actually going to be flying out to see the show. I have a press pass for it. So I'm really stoked about that. But this is Wrong Answer with Retrobate. Okay. That was Vinyl Society out of Philadelphia. We are going to start off the three block right now with Urban Waste and Wasted Life.
Whatever happened to all the arts? Big fun singing, we just fine. Who walk around at night singing, joy the next, waste of life. Don't want any part of it. That's too many, killing me. I'll go out, killing the boys. Waste of life. Whatever happened to all the arts? Big fun singing, we just fine. Who walk around at night singing, joy the next, waste of life.
Real bad all the time. This guy's life went right down the drain, man. Live.
Okay, we start off with Urban Waste with Wasted Life. Urban Waste, of course, was a New York hardcore band around from 81 to 84. They have since reformed with Johnny Waste, Kenny Ahearns, and John Darcy taking up the banner once again. Next we had Madball, which is another New York-based hardcore band. Madball is the incarnation of Freddie Madball Chrisian. I probably slaughtered that name. But Madball will be headlining the upcoming This Is Hardcore Fest in Philly, the final day on the 14th. They'll be the headliners. Like I said, I'll be there for that, and it's bound to be a great show. Last we had the Anaheim-based band instead. The great news is they've been playing shows again. I spoke with drummer Steve Larson at the Youth of Today show when they played out in Pomona last week, and he actually expressed hope for a small tour. I have my fingers crossed. I actually ran into to Steve and his son, Nate, out there. Nate stage dived for the first time. It was pretty incredible to see this 9-year-old kid stage dive into the Youth of Today show. But at least positive hardcore is in good hands with kids like that. They're willing to take up the banner. Just a reminder, San Clemente Punk is on every Monday night. We play hardcore and punk music. Tonight we will be featuring Dave Smalley. He will be on at about 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, so in about 40 minutes he'll be coming on, and we'll be doing an interview with him then. You are encouraged to call in. You can call in at 347-202-0832, or you can click on the free Skype link on the show's page. Right now we're going to get into another three songs with NOFX starting off with their cover of Last Caress off the Violent World tribute album for the Misfits. This is NOFX with Last Caress.
I got something to say. Killed your baby today, and it doesn't matter much to me as long as it did. I got something to say. I raped your mother today, and it doesn't matter much to me as long as she spread. Sweet lovely death, I waited for your breath. Let me kick one last caress.
Just to pay your bills, that's me grinding, so don't come on, Bill.
Smith saw part of the money machine. The money machine. Smith saw part of Captain King. The money machine. Makes you forget your human being. And they call it the money machine. So you can't go to school, just as hard to get your degree. Math is driving, keep the B&B. Yes, you can't work at Michael's overtime, just pay your bills. Math is driving, just don't have all your. Then one day, you're 65, and God must resign to stay alive. Just sit at home, waiting for your check. Personally, I'd rather die. Hey, fire, that don't you got old school. Set it hot, get your car for free. Back to the QIB, keep the B&B. Yes, you can work at $5 overtime just to pay your bills. Back to the QIB, just to step off your. One more time, work at $5 overtime. Back to the QIB, keep your B&B. They want your money.
Drums, Rob Thacker on guitar, and Jess Leedy on vocals. And they are playing again. They play quite a bit still out in the Oxnard area. They are on the DC Jam record label. You can find that at dcjam.com. DC Jam has Government Issue, Frontside 5, just a lot of great JFAs on that label, really keeping the old school scene alive. You know, and head on over there and you can check those guys out. They have a player. You can listen to, you know, some of the songs off of some of the albums they have. And then we finish that three block off with the Blood Clots, which is a Seattle-based street punk band. That's Let This Be Your Reveille. Blood Clots play a lot in Seattle. You can find them online if you look up the Blood Clots. They also have a Facebook page. But I've been lucky enough to see those guys, and they're a great band. We now are going to move into Vic Bondi and the Boys of Articles of Faith. Chicago's where they called home, and last year Articles of Faith actually played Riot Fest after years of really nothing. There are rumors of Articles of Faith's return for this year's Riot Fest, and let's hope that turns out to be true. We had Vic on as an interview a while back, and he spoke about they really didn't have a desire to tour, but they'd like to do at least another Riot Fest. So let's hope that's true. This is Articles of Faith with My Father's Dream.
Going faster. see the way I am. You leave any time you daggers, I'll find the caravan. Turn on my shoulders, going
check them out. You can find Rum Rebellion at www.rumrebellion.net. And their newest album, which is a great album, I just got it yesterday, is Blackwater, and that is on the Crash Assault Records out of Oregon City, Oregon. And you can find them at www.crashassaultrecords.com, you know, if you wanted to pick that up. We're going to start off this next song. Is going to be Kevin Seconds, was the lead singer of 7 Seconds. Not really one to rest on his laurels. He's still performing quite a bit with his wife, and he actually goes out on the road quite a bit with a good friend of mine, Chuck Reagan, you know, from Hot Water Music fame. But he's still performing quite a bit. He does his solo shows. They're acoustic and are very well received. Recently at the Youth of Today show, Ray Capo actually cited Kevin as one of the main reasons people accepted the cleaner, straighter wave and version of funk. This is Kevin Seconds with his brother Steve Youth, Troy Mowat, and Bobby Adams with actually a Nana cover. This is 99 Red Balloons.
You and I in a little toy shop, buy a bag of balloons with the money we've got. Set them free at the price of dawn. Two one by one, they were gone. The stock has paid, but the business upward. Left the messy, something's out there.
That was 7 Seconds with Nana's cover of 99 Red Balloons. Gorilla Biscuits has been playing shows again, which is good news to a lot of us. Recently, they shared the stage with Agnostic Front. They were accepted as one of the youth crew bands and were a vegan straight edge band that were ironically named after Quaaludes. It was a play on Ape Shit or Gorilla Biscuits is what Quaaludes were called in the New York area. This last May, they were one of the headliners for the Black and Blue Bowl. This is actually a live version, and I love live versions. That last one was a live version, too. But this is a live version of Distance from 1991.
So, this one, too.
Everybody, that San Clemente Punk is on every Monday night, and this Thursday on Fighting Words Radio Network, which is 7 day a week network. This Thursday, instead of Metal Score, we're gonna have a special San Clemente Punk, same time, 7 to 9 Eastern Standard Time. We're actually gonna have Chuck Dukowski from Black Flag as our guest, and Chuck's done a lot of other things. He's very accomplished. If you'd like to get in contact with me here at San Clemente Punk, I have a Facebook page if you search San Clemente Punk, or you can email me at sanclementepunk, all one word, at yahoo.com. If you're in a band, you want me to play you, I'm happy to play you. Send me an MP3 and a little bio on your band, and I'll get you guys on. I'm going to do a quick commercial, then I'm going to come back with a couple songs, and then we're going to have Dave Smalley on. Of course, Dave, everybody knows, you know, start off with DYS, Dag Nasty, all, and then now he's in Down by Law. But we're going to do a couple commercials, and then we'll be right back.
This portion of the program is
is presented by Dr. Kathleen Carroll of Bloomingdale Psychiatric Associates in Brandon, Florida, on behalf of the men and women in the armed forces, law enforcement, and fire rescue. Dr. Carroll treats psychiatric problems from the womb to the tomb, from children to adults. Her office is professionally staffed to deal with any type of problem and does so in a caring, gentle fashion. Dr. Carroll also specializes in sports psychiatry. If an athlete is not able to reach the next level, she can help. She is a world-class athlete, and her training in both sports psychiatry and sporting events will benefit today's athlete who has seemed to hit the wall. Dr. Carroll is located at 336 East Bloomingdale Avenue in Brandon, Florida. For more information on her services, give the office a call at 813-689-2466.
Fighting Words Radio Network listeners, if you are into 80s metal, don't forget to check out All Hail Hair, the show that brings back the greatest era in music, the hair metal days. Join hosts Bob Carroll and Francis as they walk you down memory lane and transport you back to the late 80s when your biggest worries were gas money, homework, and trying to get a date for the weekend. All Hail Hair not only plays the staples from the hair metal days, but also bands like London Choir Boys, Kix, Crocus, Jet Boy, Pretty Boy Floyd, Shotgun Messiah, and others you may have heard but have forgotten. They will also keep you up to date on the status of your favorite 80s bands. All Hail Hair is not only the place that you will hear the latest from your favorite 80s bands like Poison, Def Leppard, Rat, Warrant, Winger, and Danger Danger, but also you will hear from current bands like Wigwam, Pretty Maid, Vane Virginia, and hardcore superstar that are keeping this sound alive today. So slip on the parachute pants, spray on the Aquanet, get into the leg-worn spandex, and tune into the best 80s metal show, All Hail Hair. Friday night, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on the Fight Words Radio Network.
Okay, welcome back, guys, to San Clemente Punk, proudly part of the Fight Words Radio Network here on blogtalkradio.com. Fight Words, by the way, is a seven-day-a-week network with Monday leading off San Clemente Punk. Tuesday is Big Dog Radio. Wednesday is Tommy G Sports Night. Thursday is Metal Score, but like I said, this week is going to be a special San Clemente Punk show with Chuck Dukowski from Black Flag and several other Schwa and, you know, his Chuck Dukowski sextet now. And Friday is All Hail Hair, which is a hair metal show, which is very well done. Saturday is the flagship show, Fighting Words, and Sunday is the newest show on the Fighting Words Radio Network, and I can't remember the name of it, damn it. We are going to start off now, though. We're going to play a couple more shows or songs, and then we're going to get Dave on the phone. This is a band called Salt City Sound with a cover of London Dungeon.
Thank you.
Okay, we started off with Salt City Sound, and that was the Insurgents, or Insurgents from Seattle. Very good band, more along the DRI line, kind of thrashy, but very, very good band. They actually will be in Boise and Spokane this week. Unfortunately, I can't make it up there. I wish I could, but I can't. Okay, we're going to get into a quick song, and then we're going to have Dave on. This is Swa with, hold up, "100 Bottles of Beer."
Put here, go home! Nicaragua style!
Corporate media is controlling the masses!
One, two, one, two, three, four!
Okay, that was Swa, and we are right now connecting with Dave Smalley, my sound guy is. I believe we have him. Okay, we do. Tonight on San Clemente Funk, we are joined by a true punk pioneer, Dave Smalley. Hailing from the Boston area, Dave started off with DYS, a legendary hardcore punk band from the Boston area. Dave went on to join a list of punk bands that helped to influence and shape the punk world with Dag Nasty, All, and now Down by Law. They're all bands that were fortunate enough to have had or still have Dave as the frontman. Dave's years in punk rock has been filled with triumph and success. Please help me in welcoming to San Clemente Punk, Dave Smalley. Dave, thanks for joining us tonight. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Great, great. Dave, when you started off singing with DYS, it was a very young age. Did you ever try an instrument, or was singing always the path that you wanted to follow?
Well, that's a good question. I think, you know, overall, I do play guitar. I play guitar in Down by Law, and I wrote some of the songs in DYS, you know, really badly learning guitar. I kind of figured out guitar in a very punk rock way, which was totally on my own, you know, like a lot of other kids, you know, listening to Ramones songs and, you know, just really simple stuff. And but overall, I mean, I grew up as a singer. You know, I was singing in church choir when I was a kid, and then I did a bunch of musicals in school. So, you know, I really, you know, my instrument is my voice, which is sometimes a curse and sometimes a blessing.
Now, is there anyone in your family that you can really attribute your musical talent to?
You know, it's funny. My parents used to laugh because they, no, the answer is no. You know, I really... There's nobody that's a singer or nobody that's even an instrumentalist. My sister, when we were kids, my sister took piano lessons, and I did too. We both took piano lessons. But as far as, like, you know, sort of instinctive musicians, there's no one, like, even in, you know, like grandfathers, cousins, whatever, there's no one that I know of in our family who is as stupid as I am to be a musician. So there you go.
Okay. Now, was there...
They were all wise and chose paths of stability and less chaos, but probably a little less fun, too.
Oh, definitely a lot less fun. Now, was there a this-is-it moment in your life where you realized that, that punk was really the music that you wanted to be involved with?
That's another good question. I really think, you know, like a lot of kids, you know, you have that either period of time or one moment when the light kind of goes off and you realize how much this means to you. And, you know, for me, I knew I loved music, and I loved, like, Alice Cooper you know, like, I used to love Led Zeppelin and stuff like that, you know, as a kid. But, you know, I think really when I heard the first Clash record and the early Ramones, the first Ramones record, and, you know, even the first Dead Kennedys record, those kind of just, you know, and a lot of other stuff, too, at that same time was going on that was great musically, too, that also was a huge eye-opener, like the Specials, for instance, the whole two-tone, you know, ska revival in England. I loved all that stuff, Specials and Madness and English Beat and all that stuff. So, you know, I really think the moment for me, really, if I had to pin one moment, it's probably hearing the first Clash record, you know, because all of a sudden it was like the lyrics took a whole different depth, you know, from what had ever come before. You know, and you have bands,
right,
the sort of arena rock bands of the 70s were all, you know, which were great bands, don't get me wrong. Like, I love that stuff more than anyone. Like, I can sing you every word of the first Boston record, like, from start to finish. I could hum you the guitar leads of that record, you know. But, you know, that was great. But you know, the stuff that Clash did and all of their peers, you know, Generation X or the Undertones or obviously the Sex Pistols, you know, that stuff, that mattered to me a lot more, and I think mattered to a lot of other people in a way that the huge sort of more, you know, commercial rock stuff couldn't touch, you know. And that's not putting the other stuff down. It's just saying that punk rock spoke to people at a different level, and I think that's really what did it. It was more real.
Right. Now, Dave, you started off known as a Boston area punk musician, but you're originally from Virginia, correct?
Yep, that's right. Virginia, D.C., you know, right out. I grew up in Arlington, Virginia, which is, you know, right outside of D.C., so sort of like if you live in, you know, Dorchester, you still say I'm from Boston a lot of times or whatever to people,
right,
who aren't from there, kind of thing. If you're from Dorchester, you also say I'm from Dorchester, you know, so that's why I say to people who know where Virginia is and where I say I grew up in Arlington, you know, but really, you know, if I'm talking to somebody who doesn't really know the different little areas right outside D.C., I'll just say D.C. because it's more clear.
Yeah, I understand. I'm from around Philadelphia, but I just say Philly because it's easier.
Yeah, exactly. That same kind of thing. Yep.
Yeah.
So, you know, what's interesting is a lot of the New York people never do that, though. Like, you never hear, you know, somebody's from Brooklyn, they say, I'm from Brooklyn. You know what I mean? And if somebody's from Queens, they're from Queens. They never say, like, I mean, they might say New York, but generally they'll specify their borough. You know, I've always loved that about, you know, the people I know from New York. They really claim their area very distinctively.
Right. No, I agree. Now,
and I think we do that in Boston, too. I mean, a lot of my friends from Boston and me, too, from when I lived in Boston, you know, they'd say, where do you live? And I wouldn't just say Boston. I'd say, I live in Jamaica Plain, or I live in Brighton, or I live in Alston, or wherever else I was living at the time, you know.
Well, you know, it's a proud part of the country.
It is. I am very proud of all of those cities on the East Coast, and the great thing, you know, for me is having been a part of so much of that, you know, and even though, you know, obviously I had musical roots in D.C. and in Boston, but, you know, my musical ties to Philly and New York are very strong through all the years of playing there with all of the bands, you know. I mean, I would say some of the best shows I've ever had in my life have been in New York or Hoboken or you know, Trenton City Gardens, you know. So there's been, you know, I feel like those are part of my family too, really, you know. Those places are all a huge part of my life. Philly as well. I mean, I got in fights in Philly, you know, Love Hall, you know,
yes.
Great.
I hear you. I went out at side door at Trenton City Gardens on more than one occasion for stage diving, so
Yeah, Chattanooga. Oh man, I missed that place. That was one of the best places in the country because the vibe was just right. You know, it was big enough where you could have a big show, but not like filled with tons of security goons, and you know the kids were generally, you know, having a blast, but not. There was very rarely any violence or anything. You know, so it was a good place.
Right. No, I agree. Now, Dave, you DYS started off with a little bit less than truthful flyer. Could you tell us a story of that?
Ah, the flyer. Yes. I cannot tell a lie, you know, now, to, you know, George Washington or whatever, but I could then, damn it. And so I put up a flyer and I can't remember the exact words at this point, but the something along the lines of, you know, singer with full equipment and drummer with full kit waiting to start a punk band, you know, contact, you know, such and such a number. In fact, it's going to sound really weird to young kids or anybody really, but this was actually before there were cell phones. So I think the phone that I had was the phone in our dorm hallway at Boston College. That was it. That was the phone. I think I put that number in and got a phone call from a guy named Jonathan Anastas. He said he had a guitar player friend who was really into it and was awesome. So we show up. I go with my friend Colin Lecky, who was our guy who said he'd play drums with us. He'd never played drums before once. He just said, yeah, okay, cool. And so he, you know, and then Jonathan was totally lying about his friend. His friend was a stoner metalhead guy who had no interest in punk rock and thought it was horrible and a waste of time. So we quickly realized that wasn't going to be the lineup. But Jonathan and I, from that day forth, you know, we bonded. So it was good.
Okay. Now, when DYS first started off, who were some of the bands that really influenced you and helped form the sound of DYS?
Well, hey, I just wanted to just interrupt you for one second. I've got I'm going to be driving. Is that going to distract you from the sound of the things, or do you want me to call you back when I get to where I'm going, or what works better for you?
No, that's fine. You can drive.
Okay.
Won't distract
all right.
Me.
Yeah. Hold on one second.
Okay.
Okay, we're good. Sorry about that. I'm a man of many hats, and one of my hats right now is seeing a father and driving from the Little League church baseball game. So, close one. Lost 22-20, which is the greatest thing about these games, when they can get to that kind of score.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Anyway. So, I don't know. For DYS, I think the influences were... You know, especially Jonathan and I really came from you know, a lot of rock roots, you know.
Right.
Certainly AC/DC. You know, when we would be, I remember when we'd be working out, you know, because DYS is a very physical band. And, you know, when we'd be working out and lifting weights, it would be, you know, a whole bunch of stuff. But, you know, from the punk side, there was Misfits and, you know, I always liked a lot of the British punk stuff. And then, you know, but definitely a lot of metal. There was even Venom. You know, Venom was huge for us.
Yeah.
Judas Priest, AC/DC, you know, Kiss. There was a lot of rock and metal. Van Halen, hugely influential. Rose Tattoo was another one. I remember Rose Tattoo was pretty good. So, you know, there was a lot of that. And then, you know, everybody comes in with their own influences from prior times. And like I said, for me, you know, I had a lot of musicals and church choirs and stuff like that. So that, I think, played a role in my sense of melody and things like that, which I think helped distinguish us from some of the other bands, you know, that, you know, like I screamed like, you know, but I screamed in key, and that was a little different from what some other guys were doing. Not better or worse, but different, you know.
Right,
so,
right.
And that was just because of what I've been doing before.
Now, how did DYS come to an end?
Well, we'd actually been in slight talks with a major label at one point toward the end there, and
right.
they sort of, you know, were interested in signing us, but this is before there was a lot of that metal punk crossover stuff, you know?
Right.
And but we would have been the first. Like, we kind of were the first because nobody else was doing that at that point. I mean, you could, and the same thing with SSD, you know? Like, the two of us bands were among the first bands that were doing that kind of thing. You know, Suicidal was a little bit, and COC was a little bit, DRI a little bit, but, you know, certainly we're one of the early ones doing anything like that. And so you know, the label that was talking with us was interested in us, but they wanted us to go more in a metal direction, you know, and bring that side of us out fully. And, you know, it just wasn't something that interested me musically to do that at that point. And you know, it was kind of, we were kind of a band at the end. It wasn't sure where it wanted to go. And I think, you know, it's funny because if you see DYS now, we really know where we are, and it's really great because even the second record stuff, I would say, sounds as good or better maybe even than the first album, you know, which is the quote-unquote legendary record. But, you know, like, I think the rock songs are sounding perfectly now melded between the metal and the punk, and it sounds like DYS, you know, and it's a really great feeling. But you know, in 1985, it was kind of a, you know, just either jump in the pool all the way and swim or get out of the pool. And you know, we just kind of mutually decided we'd get out of the pool. It was very good. We went and had a meeting at Charlie's, which was a diner in Kenmore Square, and we talked about it, and everybody was sort of like, oh, maybe it's a good time to take a break. And so and then we just finished our meal together. There was no bad blood. It was just like, yeah, this is a good point to take a break. And so it ended up being a little longer break than we thought, you know, but hey, 2010 from 1985, you know, that was the break.
Now, Dave, I want to play one of my favorite DYS songs, Wolfpack. Could you tell us a little about it before I play it?
Well, you know, there's a lot of stuff, I think, with that song that is, you know, in my mind, you know, important or you know, sort of valuable. I think, first of all, the true thing to know about that song is that it is true. You know, like, I think there's this sort of myth that people, you know, think, people might think it's a myth or something, but it really wasn't true. Like, we, you know, the Boston crew, you know, the inner crew was probably like, you know, 15 to 20 of us, you could argue, but we would go around and, you know, in 20, 30, you know, strong, you know, we would, or, you know, for whatever, however many people, you know, there would be big, huge packs of us walking around, and it was a really, you know, it was a good feeling, you know, it felt strong, it felt empowered, and you felt tough, and you felt like you were, you know, able to speak your mind, and, you know, you had your brothers behind you and at your back, you know, and that was a really good feeling. And then, you know, the I don't know which version of the song you have, but on one of the versions, on the demo version, which I think Curtis and Tang later released, Husker Du was in Boston at the time, and they were coming down to the studio to check it out, and so they actually sang on Wolfpack. And, you know, of course, the irony is that they were the furthest thing from Straight Edge at that point, and it's so beautiful that they were willing to do that, you know, and we had a great time, and I've, you know, been a huge admirer of theirs for ever and ever, you know, from their very first, you know, from Landspeed record on, you know. So it was great that they were able to sing on that. And, you know, and then today it's a song that means a lot to a lot of people, and I'm really just honored and touched that it does.
All right. This is DYS with Wolfpack.
Army!
blogtalkradio.com. Tonight we're joined by Dave Smalley, frontman for so many great punk bands. Dave, again, thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it. Now Dave, after DYS broke up, you moved back to the D.C. area and you started the roadie for Dag Nasty. What happened from there? Oh, did we lose him? Oh, we lost him. Okay. We will try and get him back on. Let me play a quick song so we can get him back on. Oh, wait, he's back. Oh, wait, we're calling him. Okay, so for anybody that's listening, if you want to talk to Dave, the phone lines are open. You can contact us at 347-202-0832, or you can click on the free Skype link on the show's page. For San Clemente Punk on blogtalkradio.com. This week is we have Dave Smalley, and then next week we have Drew from Antidote, and we have Dave back. Dave, thanks again for joining us. I really appreciate it. Now,
my pleasure. Absolutely.
After DYS broke up, you moved back to the D.C. area, and you started the roadie for Dag Nasty. What happened then?
Well, I've known Brian, you know, from going to see Minor Threat, you know, and when I lived in Arlington, you know, I was one of those sort of outer suburban kids who'd come in and see them, and I didn't really know that many people, but I'd go in and see them and then go back home and, you know, think, wow, this is one of the greatest bands in the world, which it turns out it was. So I kind of knew him from that, and then when Minor Threat would play with SSD or DYS or any of the other Boston bands, you know, I always liked Brian and, you know, always thought he was, even back then, a great musician. You know, I could see it and sense it and tell. And so then I moved back, and I had roadied for SSD. You know, all the you know, inner circle people were always helping each other out a little bit, you know, and so I knew how to drive a band and lift amps and, you know, plug in a guitar and whatever. And so I offered to help out, and because he played me the demo, and I just thought it was, you know, amazing. And then they ended up, you know, at one point, you know, they ended up deciding they wanted to shift directions on their singer front, and they parted ways, and I got a phone call and said, hey, would you like to do this? And I said, I would absolutely love to do it, you know. And, you know, Dag Nasty always spoke really strongly to my heart, the music of that band and the lyrics. And, I mean, I wouldn't do any band without it speaking to my heart, but, you know, Dag Nasty definitely did for me. It was an honor to be asked, and, you know, I was ready to go, you know, I was excited.
Now, Dag Nasty was your second band that was really formed in a melting pot of talent. How did you feel being part of something that powerful and that meaningful again?
I will just say I think it's a real blessing that I have been able to be in the bands that I've been in, and there's been at least one moment in every band that I've been in, which is that, which was what I call that moment, with a capital T and a capital M. And it's that
right.
moment happens when you realize that what you're doing is something unbelievably precious and special and fulfilling and hopefully making a difference in the world and, you know, in people's lives, including your own, you know? And
right.
so every band that I've been in has been, you know, just fortunate enough to have at least that moment for me at one point or another. You know, with Down by Law, I was with Punk Rock Academy Fight Song. You know, we made that record, and it's like everybody just knew. You know, everybody knew that, you know, we hadn't even mixed it yet. Everybody said, you know, okay, this is unbelievable for, you know, this is way more than what we thought it was going to be. And you know, I think with Bag Nasty, that was certainly when we recorded Can I Say, you know, that was that moment for me, just being in that in your ear and recording that. And this, there was a spark, a kick, a connection. I don't know what the word is, but it was something. It was electric, and it was there, and you could feel it. And then the cool thing about that album, I think, is how well it still holds up. You know, it still, to me,
yeah.
feels just as real as it did in 1986. You know, and that's a really nice thing to be able to say.
Absolutely. No, I actually I was at a show not too long ago, and they had my old Dag Nasty shirt on that I bought when you guys came through Philadelphia one time. And some kid asked me if I heard the new Dag Nasty, and I said, yeah. He goes, yes, Can I Say? I was like, okay. I think it was new when I was a kid, maybe. But
Oh, that's great, though. But see, it was new to him, so that's cool, you know?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, that's
exactly.
So great that he said that, in a way. You know, that makes me really happy.
Yeah,
I mean, and I'm always about that, you know? I'm always... There were some people who would, you know, kind of be punk elitists and be, oh, well, they weren't there in 1984. So, you know, but I never thought that. I always thought, hey, if you find it in 2011, that's just great, you know. And everybody has a different time that they can discover stuff and different, you know, situations. Not everybody lives near a big urban city like Philly or New York or D.C., you know. So, you know, some might take some people a little longer to discover stuff. But when they do, it's precious and special to them, and that's great, you know. And I'm constantly discovering stuff that, you know, I didn't know existed before. And, you know, I might hear a Jerry Lee Lewis song or a Chuck Berry song or something, you know, and say, I never heard that, that's incredible, you know. And meanwhile, I'm sure there's people who've heard it 1,000 times, but to me it's, you know, inspirational and fresh, you know. So that's a great story.
Now, Dave, had your influences changed at this point from DYS, and what drove you in DYS to your time in Dag Nasty?
Had the influences changed?
Yeah.
You know, no, I think your influences are your influences, and you bring them with you. But I also believe in letting each band discover who it is and not trying to be doing the exact same thing, which is why I've been so happy that you know, the four big bands that I've done, they all have their own sound. And I think that's really important, you know, to let each band be what it is and not try and force it to be, you know, what you did before. And so, you know, I think the influences were probably still the influences that I had, you know, the same thing. They hadn't gone away. And I still loved Alice Cooper, and I still loved, you know, whoever, the Doobie Brothers even. You know, Doobie Brothers are a huge influence on me. And,
yeah.
So I still loved all that stuff, whether I was in Down by Law or All or Dag Nasty or DYS, you know. But I think, you know, the real trick is to let it breathe, you know. And if you let it breathe, just is it's a little more real and organic, you know. And that, and
right.
I think, and I think that's the key to any band being successful, is to make it real and to let it be what it is.
Because
the ones that are posed, that's pretty obvious pretty fast, you know, and you can hear it. So, you know.
Right. No, I agree. Now, Dave, you left Dag Nasty in 1986 to pursue a scholarship. Was that a difficult decision? Did that take some time to make?
it actually was a really difficult decision. And, you know, one of the things that was tough about it was I'd applied for the scholarship before when I applied for that scholarship, I had just been, it was when I was just roadieing for Dagnasty, and I had no clue that, you know, there was going to be anything, you know, happening with, that I was going to become a singer or that, you know, or that we would be doing something that was, you know, known and special for people. So I didn't know that was going to happen when I'd applied for that scholarship. If I'd known all that, I probably wouldn't have even applied for it. But I wanted to go to grad school, and my parents, you know, they couldn't afford to send me. So, right. You know, because we weren't a rich family. So I just, you know, I just, it was a choice, you know, and I had to make the choice. And, you know, that's probably, if you ask me what's your biggest what if in life, that would probably be it, you know. I mean, you know, there's always, everybody always has what ifs in life, right? For a lot of people, it's like a relationship, and those are always torture to think about. Well, what if I'd stayed with that girl, or, you know, girls, what if I'd stayed with that guy, you know, and or whatever, you know. But and that's, I have those too, but the biggest what if I think I have is what if I had decided not to take that thing and go to Israel and instead stayed with Dagnasty, you know. And I don't, the answer is I don't know. And you can't play that game because otherwise you'll drive yourself crazy. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, the flip side for me was I moved to Jerusalem, Israel, which is one of the most unique cities on earth. And I lived in the Jewish quarter of the old city of Jerusalem, surrounded by walls that were thousands of years old, and listened to the imam call the prayers, you know, and just, I lived like within a 5-minute walk of the Wailing Wall. And, you know, it just, that's another experience that helped make me who I am now. And if I hadn't had that experience, who knows, you know, maybe my whole life would have been different in a different way, you know, if I hadn't gone there. So you can't second guess life. You just got to go with it and make your best decision that you can at the time. But yeah, it was a very difficult call even back then.
Right. Now, Dave, I want to play a live version of my favorite Dagnasty song, Justification. Could you tell us a little about the song?
Well, I mean, one of the things that I think made, you know, like DYS was about sort of, you know, really like taking on the world that we just saw, all these, you know, these druggy rock stars, excess, and all these drug addicts in high school, and sort of a world that was filled with, you know, things that we wanted to change. And so DYS was much more of a fist to the face of society. Dagnasty, I think, was more of a sword, a razor sharp, elegant sword, cutting away excess, just bad things from individuals. You know, I think Dagnasty was much more sort of like looking at your immediate situation, your immediate friendships, your immediate crises of personalities and things like that, and then, you know, trying to figure out what was going wrong and why. And you know, a lot of those lyrics are from Brian on that first record. And
right.
You know, so you know, like many of the songs on the record, they're based on, you know, talking about what was, you know, things that we saw that were bothering us. And but the great thing about a lot of those songs is that you can apply them to your life just as easily as you know, each person can make them their own, you know. And so I think with Justification, there are some things that I know it's about, but I think I'd rather, like, let it be what everybody wants it to be in their own life. And the lyrics are really about, you know, trying and failing and getting up and trying again, you know?
Right. Okay, this is Dagnasty with Justification.
This is the last one.
This is the last one. It's called Justification. Beefeater's up next, and thanks a lot to this club. You guys have been great.
We have someone to fall in. We have something to take.
Steve Peters up next. Take care.
Okay, welcome back to San Clemente Pump. Tonight we have the very talented and accomplished Dave Smalley as our guest. If you'd like to ask a question, please call us at 347-202-0832, or you can click on the free Skype link on the show's page. Now, Dave, at this point you had been involved in three legendary
Frank.
Punk bands, DYS, Dagnest, and now All.
We've lost them.
I'm sorry?
We lost them again. Yeah.
Oh, crap. Okay. You want to try calling them?
Yeah.
All right, sorry, guys. We lost Dave again. He's on his cell phone. He's going in and out of coverage. He's driving his kids home from a baseball game. So, of course, for those of you that are just joining us, San Clemente Punk is on every Monday. You can reach us. Or listen to us every Monday here on blogtalkradio.com on the Fight Morse Radio Network. And this Thursday, we actually will be having a special show where we'll be interviewing Chuck Dukowski from Black Flag. And we are rejoined by Dave. Dave, thanks for joining us again.
No problem, man.
Dave, you left Dagnasty for school at this point, which was a very noble decision. But the Descendants' own Milo also went to school. Then the remaining band members came calling on you. Tell us how that happened.
Well, it was sort of like when it happened, you know, I knew, kind of like when I was in DYS, I'd met and befriended, you know, Brian and sort of knew him from that experience. Well, I also knew, you know, the Descendants had done a tour with Dagnasty. In fact, my first tour with Dagnasty was with the Descendants. And Dagnasty, which, you know, it's so funny because you look back now and you're like, oh, my God, I would love to see that show. I mean, I was in Dagnasty and I'd still love to see that show. You know what I mean? Like, I would love to be able to step back in time and go see a show with Descendants and Dagnasty. That would be, like, a really cool show, you know? But
yeah.
I liked the Descendants a lot, and I'd gotten, you know, talk with Bill during those shows, and I also knew Bill because Black Flag and DYS had played together in Boston. And, you know, I just, you know, he liked me and I liked him. And, you know, it was sort of, you know, he liked my singing and I loved his songwriting and drumming. And, you know, so it's just when Milo was going to go back to school, it's funny because he was going back and they were ending the Descendants at that point. And I was finding myself really missing music. You know, I was over in Israel and, you know, and really missing it, you know, and because it's in your blood, you know, and you know this, whether you're a musician or a fan or a, you know, whatever, you know, it's in your blood. You know, the punk rock is, what I love about it is that it's not just something you put on in the background, you know, while you're doing whatever else, while you're doing the dishes. I mean, you might put it on in the background while you're doing the dishes, and that's great too, but, you know, punk rock matters, you know, once it does, it never leaves you, you know, it never leaves you. In some sense, you will always care about this and always value it, and it will always be something to help shape who you are and who you became,
right.
and in turn from that, that helped make the world a better place, you know. So do I believe in punk rock? I absolutely believe in hardcore and punk rock, yeah, I think it matters, you know. So I was having all these conflicted feelings, you know. You know, I was, you know, 10 million miles away from everybody. And, you know, Bill Stevenson called me from L.A. and from South Bay and gave me a call. And we talked many long times. I think he told me at the time his phone bill was over $1,000. and he, you know, we just talked a lot, you know. And he wanted the right singer for what he wanted. And I wanted to do the right thing for what I wanted, you know. And so it was really great that we were able to have those long talks and figure out that this could actually work. And I really loved the fact that he was approaching it with this vision, you know, the whole idea of all, you know, and, you know, go for all. That's what it's all about. That's life, you know. And I've constantly said this to people, and Bill, I think, really liked it when I said this to him. You know, you've only got such a limited amount of time on Earth. You know, and let's say you live till 80, okay? you take away your first 15 years because you're still a kid and you're growing up, and then you've got to take away the last 10 or 15 years on the other end because you're starting to slow down and decay and everything. So you know, you're talking, if you're lucky, you've got 50 years tops in which to accomplish, in which to live, in which to breathe, dream, scream, you know, love, hate,
right,
fight, you know, and that's not a lot of time. And so I really loved it when Bill had this thing of going for all, you know, go for it, do it. You know, they old, like the cliche expression now is they say, dude, go big or go home or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And I kind of love that approach to life, and I've always tried to adhere to it as much as I could, you know. So yeah, we talked a lot about it, and, you know, one of the big things was I said I didn't want to do Descendants Jr. I said I wanted it to be its own band with its own songs, and I didn't want to be, like, repeating, just doing, going out and trying to sing every Descendants song. Yeah, I said I could do it, and I wanted to do it, and I love those songs, but I said I wanted us to be our own band, and he really wanted that too. So, yeah, so then I flew back. I flew back, saw my girlfriend in New Jersey at the time, and then I got on the next plane and flew out to L.A., and they picked me up. We went to eat at Alfredo's, and we went to practice same day. There was no rest. It wasn't like, hey, take a couple days, get your bearings. No, it was, here's the van, here's the band, here's some Mexican food that's the best Mexican food on earth, and practice starts in an hour. So,
okay.
It was great.
Now, Dave, in 1988, you were in awe when you guys released the critically acclaimed albums, All Roy Says and All Roy for President. Once again, you're breaking the mold for a punk band. What do you attribute that success to?
Thank you for saying that. I really do believe in breaking the mold, you know. If I see a mold, my instinct is to break it. I got to be honest, you know. I think molds are made to be broken. I want to be the guy that breaks them, you know. But the thing is, you have to do it wisely. Like, you don't want to, you know, it's not enough to just say, I want to do something different. You have to figure out what can you do that works within your particular set of values and your particular set of skills. And this is in anything in life, whether you're a plumber or a, you know, president of the United States or whatever, you know, it doesn't matter. It's just like whatever you do in life, use your skills to their best abilities. And so I think for me, with all the things that I've tried to do, has just been like, hey, what do we have here? And I'm like, oh, wait, I'm in a band with one of the greatest pop punk songwriters ever, who also happens to be one of the, if not the, greatest drummers ever, you know? And so I kind of really just wanted to encourage Bill to be Bill, and he brought out, and it's sort of like with Brian too, you know, in Dag Nasty, Brian brings out a lot of stuff in me, and so does Sam Williams in Down by Law. Those two guys bring out a lot of stuff in me because of what great musicians and songwriters they are. And Bill was doing the same thing. And so Bill brought out a certain, you know, joyful pop, you know, and you know, there was a joy to those first two All records, you know. There were some sad songs,
right,
you know, but there's a joyfulness to it also, you know. And, you know, like Just Perfect, you know. Just Perfect's a beautiful song. It's a sad song because it's the irony is, you know, he knows that he can't make everything just perfect, you know, but he wants to, you know, he wants to believe that he can, you know, and so it's a bittersweet
right.
song, but yet, you know, it's at the same time it's phrased and written in such a beautiful way that you can sing it and really feel a little bit of hope, even though there's some bittersweetness in the words too, you know. So I was just moved by what he did, and you know, and again, I kind of went with that theory of letting it be what it is, you know, rather than trying to, I didn't want to make Dag Nasty version 2.0, you know, or DYS version 2.0. I wanted it all to be what it was. And we had Stefan Edgerton on guitar, you know, who's, you know, a very distinctive, excellent guitar player. And Carl Alvarez is a very distinctive and excellent bass player. And so, you know,
you know, another philosophy of mine in life is really just let people do what they do. Like my boss at my job is really a great guy, and one of the things I love about him is, you know, he kind of just says, you know, I hired you to do this thing that you do. I trust you. I think you're going to do it well. If you have any problems, come see me, and otherwise, go for it. You know what I mean? And that's the best kind of boss in the world to have. And so you know, and that's kind of how I view anything in life. If you got something, be good, let them be good. And so I just kind of let that band be what it needed to be. And, you know, and we ended up all encouraging each other and writing, you know, for me that, you know, that moment that we said that you have that moment, you know, that capital T, capital M, for me was when we did All Right for Prez, you know, which I think is just a really, really nice record. It just felt really, really like, okay, this is a real band that has its own sound and style, and, you know, and I really loved that record a lot.
That was a great record. Now, you were still in school at this point, right, at Cal State, right?
No, I hadn't gone there yet. I moved out to L.A. just to be in All. I actually I didn't go back to school until I finished All, until I left All.
Okay. All right.
So when I was in All, you know, there's no way I could do school because we were on the road. You know, I was in the band a year and a half or whatever it was, and I was on the road doing shows, tours for most of that time. You know, no one works harder than the band All. No one. Not one band. You will not be able to find me one band that I would agree works harder than All. There are plenty of bands that work as hard, I'm sure, but I can tell you that no one tops them, you know, in those days especially. It was nonstop. Every night, every city, never stopping. You know, that Go for All thing, we were really trying it. You know, we were doing it.
Now, you also periodically perform with Dag Nasty from time to time.
No, we never did. When I left the band, it was not a happy thing, and there was some unhappiness, you know, between Brian and I, especially over that, and but that was a long time ago, and you know, we were kids still, really, you know. So nowadays, of course, we're very good friends and have no, you know, we got upset with each other because we were so young. And you know, he didn't want me to quit, and I didn't want to quit either, but I felt like that was my only opportunity to go to school. So, you know, it's a tough call, you know, but so no, we didn't do anything with Dag Nasty.
Okay. Now, Dave, at this point, you've been involved with three legendary punk bands, DYS, Dag Nasty, and then All. How did it feel to have your talent so, you know, appreciated and really sought after?
It felt great, you know. I think, like I say, I mean, I view it as, you know, sometimes in life you gotta have luck too, you know. And so I had great luck to be able to be in those particular musicians at those particular times, and the fact that they were able to bring out of me, hopefully some of. You know, the best that I could give it, you know, and that meant a lot that I was with these great musicians who could bring out and saw in me what they wanted to hear, and they trusted me to give life to their words or their songs. And I don't know, it's a blessing. It's a blessing, and I can't analyze it too much. I just got to say I'm just a guy who does what I do, and I'm really so glad that I'm able to do it. And you know, I'm staggered sometimes when I look and say, oh wait, you're in DYS, you're in Dag Nasty, you know what I mean? Like I just can't,
yeah.
You know, I look on it sometimes just almost like I'm an alien looking down at myself, you know, like I'm out of body experience or something, like whoa, you know, because I understand that mean a lot to people, and I appreciate that so much, you know. And I love everyone who's ever gotten into every one of those bands has been, I consider, my family, you know. And so, you know, I'm just happy and grateful.
Now, at this point, you formed Down by Law. You also have a degree.
was there ever a desire for you to go into the business world and leave music behind, or did you feel like that would be cutting out a part of you that you couldn't have accepted?
That's a great question. I think that the experience of being in Israel and not doing music for a year and realizing that I couldn't do that. Like, I couldn't keep on. So I knew I wanted to go to school, and I thought I, you know, might go, you know, maybe teach or maybe, you know, do research or something, or, you know, I'm sort of a history dork, so maybe I'd be a good history teacher. I don't know, you know, but it's just like, you know, I think that 1 year in 1987 in Israel was pretty pivotal for me to not walk away from it again, you know. No, but if I had to, I have to, you know, like, you know, every singer always worries their voice could go. Every father knows at some point he may have to give up everything to do something for his children, you know. And so those are things that I accept as a potential that could happen, you know. But, you know, having tried to step away from it once and realized that it really wasn't a good idea for me not to do it, I missed it, I loved it. I literally, you know, cried without it, you know. It was just sort of, yeah, I kind of had the taste of walking away and didn't like it, and I don't want to taste that dish again.
Okay. Now, Down by Law was another chance for you to really lay your soul bare in musical form. Is that a difficult thing to do? Do you often feel naked on your albums?
Do I feel what? Sorry?
Naked and really exposed. I mean,
oh,
you let your soul
yeah.
bare.
I think so. But one of the things I think I'm most proud of is that, you know, I really think that you want your songs, or at least I want my songs. I won't say what other people should do, but I want my songs to be something that people all over can feel and make their own, you know. And I really love, like, when I hear somebody say, you know, that Can I Say got them through high school, or, you know, that...
Right.
You know, that All Scratched Up is their favorite record of the Epitaph 90s, or, you know what I mean, or whatever, you know.
Right.
Or, you know, these are things that really mean the world to me. So I don't view it so much as here I am, you know, look at me and here's my life and my struggles. But what I think I might be a little better at is saying who are we as a human species, you know, and sort of all those moments that we all share, you know, justification you brought up earlier, you know, that's, we have tried and failed, we have stumbled and fallen, you know, these are universal human constants, you know. I look at, or, you know, on a different level, you know, like in Down by Law, you know, the song Haircut, you know, Pearl
right.
Jam clones are everywhere, fuck that shit, go cut your fucking hair, you know what I mean, like, that hit
yeah.
home with so many people, and I didn't realize that it would, but it did, you know, because everyone was so sick of all these bands trying to be Pearl Jam and Mudhoney or whatever, you know. So it really hit home for a ton of people, you know, and that, so that is what I think more that I am, you know. I am happy to be a voice of universal shared emotions, and that's if I can be. That's great.
Aside from music, you've been successful in your life in other ways. You hold a degree from Boston College, a master's in political science from Cal State. Clearly, you're still passionate about the ideals that you started out with. Do you feel, as I do, that punk has really moved away from or shied away from politics that it was so eager to address in the 80s?
Yeah, it's definitely changed. You know, that's a really good observation. The question then is that okay? Like, is it still punk if it's not
right.
like what it was in 1986, or, you know, and I would argue yes, you know, because otherwise you get static, right? Like, you have to have everything in life has to progress and evolve, because, you know, otherwise we'd still be talking to each other with two tin cans and a string, you know, but instead
right.
I'm on my cell phone in my yard and you're in a I don't even know where you are exactly, but, you know, this is going out digitally. So, you know what I mean? Like, so progress happens and things change, and I think you can either really fight that or you can understand it and sort of make sure at least it goes where you want it to go. So
right.
I don't think there's, yeah, but there are some great bands playing now that are younger bands, you know, like you're younger than me anyway, Strike Anywhere, you know, I think that's a great band. I mean, they're not young, but, you know, certainly they're younger than me. And, you know, there are a number of groups that I think are definitely exciting and cool out there. It's just different, and it definitely is different. But, you know, the times are different, too. So
they are. You know. They are.
Yeah. We used to say back in the day, we used to say that, like, Margaret Thatcher and Reagan were, like, the best things for punk rock, you know, because, you know, they were easy to look at and say, okay, that's what I want to fight right there. You know what I mean? Like, that was, like, you know, because those personalities of theirs were so stark and strong, you know, that like, you know, there was no, it's hard to get that mad at, like, George Bush Sr. or Obama or whatever. They're not as, like, you know, they're not as, like, stark is the only word I keep coming back to, you know. But
yeah.
Reagan and Thatcher, that was stark, you know what I mean? So it,
right.
it sparked a lot of rebellion, you know, for sure.
I agree.
Like, I don't think
and having grown up in
what's that, sorry?
I was going to say, you know, having grown up in that, I mean, it was such a great time, you know, and it was the golden age of punk.
Yeah, it really was. And, you know, and you know, again, I think why does punk matter? Well, punk matters because you're trying to make a difference, whether that's make a difference in your own individual life, in your scene, in your society, in the world, you know. And so, you know, when you have this sort of cultural icon, or not icon, that's the wrong word, this cultural just stark figure, you know, like a Thatcher, you know, and you're in England, man, you know, that,
right.
that's an upbitch. There's 100 bands that started just because of Margaret Thatcher, you know what I mean? So,
right.
you know, and
right.
so, but we don't have that right now, you know, because, you know, there hasn't been any sort of period that matched that period. And
no.
So it's a different, so things have changed in that regard. And so I think a lot of punk today is a little bit more, less brutally trying to topple the system and a little more personal even than it ever was.
Now, Dave, we're right up against it, and I want to give you these final minutes to tell us where we can find you online, any tour plans you have. Say hi to your kids if you want. The floor is yours.
Oh, okay. Well, let's see. Your first question is where to find stuff, and I think there's this place I've heard of called Facebook. I really think it's got a future. If you go to Punk Rock Days on Facebook, that's one of the sites that some friends set up for me. There's also a DYS Facebook site and a Down by Law Facebook site. I'm sure there isn't all one, but since that band sort of kept going, I didn't really follow it. And I think there's also a new Dag Nasty Facebook. So there's all different, the bands that I've done, I think there's a site for all of them on Facebook. And Punk Rock Days is sort of like the you know, the one that is sort of the me personal page. And I'll put news about any solo shows or anything. Oh, and one other thing that I should mention is that I just did what I think had a That Moment thing already, and I'm very excited about. I'm in a project band with some friends, with Sean from Good Riddance, Curtis
right.
from SNFU, and a couple of friends from Dirt Loader. We've been up in Canada for the last month or two recording an album. It's going to be Dave Smalley and the Farmhouse Five. And it's amazingly cool to hear what's going on with this. The manager says, he describes it as giving new life to old classics. And what we did was we were playing songs by Dag Nasty and DYS and all and Down by Law. And we are putting them in a, I want to say, country or bluegrass approach. We got a banjo. Sean's playing the drums with brushes. We've got a slide guitar, a fiddle, a piano on some of it. And it's unbelievable to hear these songs like What Now from Dag Nasty or Wishing Well from All or Gruesome Gary from Down by Law. You know, it's unbelievable to hear these songs with a completely new take. And I think people are going to really dig it. And I think everybody who's heard it so far has been like, holy shit, you know. So
yeah.
So it's really exciting to hear it and to have done it again and in this way. And so that's going to be coming out. You know, I just finished the vocals this last weekend. Yeah, I just got back last night, actually. And so I'm super excited about that and hearing how it's all going to come out. And you know, that's the hard part about being in a band. You know, you have to, when you record an album, a lot of times you have to wait to hear and see the final product, and it's like torture, you know, because I really just want I want to hear finished mixes today, you know, but of course that's not realistic. So, but anyways, I think it'll be really cool. So I'm so excited because I love, you know, the guys who did this, when we did this together, have all just been, you know, old friends, and, you know, and they're just killer musicians and good people. So, you know, and they're all playing songs that they grew up loving, you know, which is really nice. So I'm very stoked about that.
Now, Dave, I'm going to finish off tonight with Heroes and Hooligans. Before I play it, can you tell us a little bit about the song?
Sure. That song is actually fairly, a very personal song for me. I had actually been diagnosed with melanoma, stage 4 melanoma, which is pretty hardcore. And that's skin cancer, for those who don't know what that is. And so now I still have a big, you can see it on my forearm, you know, big, huge chunk that they had to take out of my arm. They had to go in. They took out what they thought was enough, and then they said, no, it had gone too deep. They had to go back in and take more out. And then actually it was so much that it, like, let it sort of caverned in part of my forearm. The doctor took pictures of my arm, and she said she wanted to use that as a warning to kids to put on sunscreen, because I'd had a mole there, and I'd just been out and living in L.A. and going to Venice Beach all the time and Hermosa Beach and hanging out, and, you know, and so,
right.
So it just roasting in the sun with being a Scotch-Irish boy, you know, so
yeah.
It was not a good combination. And when I found out, when I got diagnosed with it and it was officially, you know, melanoma, and I said, well, you know, what's the story, you know? And she said, well, this could be what gets you, you know? And I appreciated the honesty, but it's still kind of sobering to, you know, to hear that, right? And So I remember I went down into, I was living in South Pasadena, California, and I went to a park near my house, And I sat down underneath a palm tree, and in this nice little park with a lot of grass and everything, and I started thinking about life and how precious it is and how it can, before you're ready for it too. And I wasn't quite ready then, you know. I wasn't quite. I mean, nobody says probably that they ever are, but I definitely wasn't ready to call it a day quite yet. You know, I felt like there was still a lot of stuff I wanted to do, and you know, still a lot of albums to make or whatever, you know. So I wrote that song and sort of like, you know, this life is a wonderful thing, you know, and appreciate it while you've got it, because you never know, you know, when it's going to get taken away.
Right. Well, Dave, I really appreciate you coming on. You've been a great interview.
Thank you so much. Well, great questions, too. Really, thank you.
Thanks. Well, we're going to finish off with Heroes and Hooligans, and I appreciate everything, Dave, and good luck with Down by Law.
Thank you very much, brother. Take care.
All right. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Okay, this is Down by Law with Heroes and Hooligans. Tune in next Monday. We'll
we'll have Drew from Antidote and another fantastic, fantastic show with Dave Smalley, another great interview. Thanks for tuning in, guys. This is Down by Law with Heroes and Hooligans.